This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Last but not least, oh, you're running. So I have to say a few things about you, Sandy. First. So, yeah, hurry up. Sandy is the you know, head of the transplant surgery fellowship, the director of the transplant surgery fellowship, and she really carries a very impressive resume in her research, and she has done a lot, and then many of the publications were seminal, like the donor risk index and immunosuppression withdrawal is really cutting edge research in liver transplant and immunosuppression. And you should know that last year at the ASLD, she delivered the Thomas Darso state-of-the-art lecture for her work, cutting-edge work in immunosuppression and liver transplantation. So we're really happy to have her talk about this really very impressive study.
Thank you. So as I was sitting there waiting for my chance to talk, I came up with the way to fix the fact that we're late. We should just turn back the clock right now. Then we'd be exactly on time. So anyway, it's a pleasure, and I will get going, and I'll try to march through, and we can always handle questions later. So the title that I was given was Immunosuppression, Is It Possible? I think most of you can guess that I would not be up here if it were not possible. So I think what we should really also talk about is it advisable? I think there are a lot of obvious reasons why we might want to discontinue immunosuppression. Immunosuppression is blamed for a lot of the things that appear to shorten the longevity of the liver transplant patient. We've all put in so much work getting these people to transplant. We've heard how hard it is to get these people to transplant. And then we have things like chronic kidney disease, hypertension, and cardiovascular disease, diabetes, of course, not to mention obesity, hyperlipidemia, for which we have to wait another 5 years for good treatment, and new cancers. And all of these can be one can point in some manner, shape, or form towards immunosuppression as exacerbating or causing these problems. So many, many years ago, we've heard from Sir Roy Kalm that pigs given no immunosuppression can survive, unlike other organ transplant recipients, for a long time without any immunosuppression. So, of course, I thought, well, if pigs can do it, why can't my patients do this, right? So let's try this on patients. I certainly wasn't the only person to think about this, and these are some recent publications about immunosuppression withdrawal trials. So I emphasize these are trials as opposed to experiences where people were taken off of immunosuppression, one here or one there, because they developed a contraindication. Here there was an aim to actually study whether this was doable and under what circumstances and what were the outcomes. So what you can see is that the range of a success is anywhere from 20 to 60%. I should point out that the first three studies are in adult liver transplant recipients, and then the final study at the bottom is pediatric liver transplant recipients. You can see that most people were quite far out from transplant. 75 months, 130 months. We have to wait a long time before we're bold enough to try this effort. The immunosuppression was withdrawn over anywhere from about 4 to 8 months, and then there's been some follow-up from anywhere from 48 months all the way up to about 108 months, which is getting close to 10 years. So I'll show you more about the follow-up. Therefore, I think immunosuppression can be stopped, but are we making people walk a tightrope and they might plunge to their death, or are we just pushing them out of airplanes, as has been described by people at national meetings? So one of the concerns about safety over time is what is the health of the liver allograft? Maybe there is subclinical immunologic attack leading to fibrosis, and Bilal told you how bad fibrosis is. So there's data from pediatric liver transplant recipients who get protocol biopsy. We're not doing those in adults anymore, so that's why I'm shifting to the pediatric literature, except for Hep C, but that's, of course, a different scenario, and that's almost disappeared. So at this point, there's evidence from many studies, both in Europe and in the United States, that fibrosis in pediatric liver grafts increases over time. And many of these people are getting surveillance biopsies. These are not for cause or indication biopsies, i.e., they have normal liver tests, and this is all lurking under the surface in the liver. In addition, there's been association of alloantibodies, antibodies against the donor, as well as autoantibodies with the progressive fibrosis that's been observed. And so in this WHISPER study, where we withdrew immunosuppression in a pilot trial, 20 patients, 3 centers, as shown here, we sought to look, are these pediatric liver grafts who are off of immunosuppression, all the data I showed you previously are children on immunosuppression, are they scarring their liver secondary to some sort of subclinical chronic alloimmune response? And so here are the 12 children. They've been off drugs for almost 10 years on average, anywhere from about 8 to 10 years. The follow-up is shown. We recently published in Hepatology the data related to the 5-year outcomes, but you are now privy to see the 8-year outcomes here. This is a graph of inflammation over time. Let me just take you through this. Each box is a patient, as identified by a big number in the upper right corner. This shows 4 biopsies, baseline, 3-year, 5-year, and 8-year biopsies. You can see different color red bars, which correspond to inflammation in the portal, interface activity, lobular inflammation, and perivenular inflammation. And finally, you can see that in general, there is inflammation intermittently, but it is not systematically progressive over time. Here is fibrosis, and it's the same type of figure. The fibrosis is portal for the light blue, subsinusoidal for the medium blue, and perivenular for the dark blue. And again, there isn't a clear evidence of systematic progression of fibrosis over quite a long time period of these kids not receiving any immunosuppression. And here's just some images of the biopsies. You can see on the left, it's July 2006. On the right, it's 8 years later. And the fragmentation is secondary, in some cases, to the nodular regenerative hyperplasia that's observed. And you can see a close-up of the portal tracts, and you can see these are very healthy-looking livers. And when you look at the trichrome, you certainly don't see big stripes of navy blue coursing through these biopsies. Here's another patient, and interestingly, this patient came into the study with donor-specific antibodies against donor HLA. And here you can see the 2 biopsies 8 years apart. The portal tracts look very lovely, and there's certainly no significant change in the fibrosis over that period of time. And then finally, here's a third patient who didn't have antibodies when they entered the study, developed antibodies as we took away immunosuppression. So have I unleashed a dragon, and these antibodies are now going to destroy the liver? And what you can see again is that the liver looks healthy, the bile duct looks pristine, and again, there is no significant progressive fibrosis. So I think that what I've shown you is the data that's available in the world with the longest follow-up of children, anybody, status post a liver transplant, who's not been on immunosuppression, enrolled in a trial, and systematically followed. So thus far, it can be safe to be off of immunosuppression. So we are currently in the midst of a 12-center a 12-center study to further expand on this trial experience because we were only allowed to do a pilot trial, so you'll have to stay tuned for the next installment. Now, what are we doing to try to make immunosuppression withdrawal safe? Because, you know, it kind of seems like we try, we see if you're successful, but a significant proportion of the patient rejects. So there are three approaches to try to make this less of a random event. First of all, I would say that the studies have thus far suggested that delaying immunosuppression withdrawal, waiting 5 to 10 years after transplant, you have a much higher likelihood of success. So just the clock ticking is a bit of a biomarker to try to make immunosuppression withdrawal safer. But we'd certainly like more than that just as a biomarker. So what are we doing from a more scientific perspective? So just to remind you, in order to look for a biomarker, unfortunately, we have to send canaries into the coal mine. In order to figure out if we can identify a test that can predict who's going to be successful, we have to draw the blood or do the liver biopsy before we start withdrawing. And then we have to divide people up into those who fail and those who succeed. And then we need to compare. So the big problem is that we need to find this predictor before you withdraw immunosuppression. Because if you look after you've withdrawn immunosuppression, then these two groups of patients are very different because one group is on drug and one group is off drug, and any biomarker can be affected by the immunosuppression itself. So we have to find something that's going to work at the beginning. So there were attempts, and I'm not going to show you the data in the interest of time, to look for peripheral blood biomarkers. But unfortunately, even though they were very promising, they did not transfer at a multi-center level because the differences in the preparation of the specimen, either the peripheral blood RNA specimen or the frozen PBMCs that were then tested, the differences in the specimen preparation overwhelmed the differences between tolerant and non-tolerant subjects. So that was a real problem. But the same group then looked in the liver tissue, and it didn't matter so much how the liver tissue was handled from center to center. So when you look at the liver tissue, could you just look at it and immunophenotype the cells that are in the tissue? Did you have a lot of T cells? Did you have a lot of effector T cells? And immunophenotyping CD8, CD4, regulatory T cells did not differ between tolerant and non-tolerant subjects. However, the expression of the genes within the liver did differ. So there was a transcriptional profile. And the transcriptional profile, very interestingly, related to iron homeostasis genes, not immunologic genes. And these differences were also reflected in the serum level of proteins affected that are involved in iron homeostasis, hepcidin and ferritin. So here are the tolerance on the left panel and the non-tolerance on the right panel, and I think you can appreciate that their transcriptional profile differed. And these differences predicted the outcome of immunosuppression withdrawal. So now there's a study that's going on in Europe led by Alberto Sanchez Foyo at King's College, which is specifically asking, does using this liver biopsy biomarker increase the safety of withdrawal? So this is basically a validation trial. A subject undergoes the tissue biomarker determination. They're randomized in one bucket, irrespective of the biomarker, you wean. In the other bucket, you only wean if the biomarker is favorable. And so if the biomarker can increase the success rate of withdrawal compared to blind weaning, even after eligibility has been, you know, determined, then the biomarker might be a very good tool because we could do a liver biopsy and assess the likelihood that the person may not need any immunosuppression. The second approach to try to make withdrawal safer is to understand why people are tolerant and why people are not. I'm going to just very quickly in two slides summarize this whole concept, which is a little bit complicated. We've always thought that heterologous immunity, sort of this innocent bystander immunity, so to speak, was a barrier to transplant tolerance. We all grow up and we gain immune responses and we gain memory, we get exposed to viruses, and all of this memory that we build up might make it difficult for us to be tolerant because we can, some of our natural immune responses to the pathogens that we've seen can overlap into the donor. So what we've, however, noticed in withdrawal trials is that hep C positive patients who have this chronic exposure to a virus and hep C negative patients have similar frequencies of tolerance. And so when this was examined in greater detail, again by Alberto Sanchez-Foyo, what he found was that we know that hep C positive patients have increased exhaustion of their T cells that are against specific for hep C virus. And the reason, one of the reasons you don't clear hep C is because your T cells, the cells that are supposed to get rid of this virus, are exhausted because the virus is changing. However, it's stimulating T cells, and the T cells are getting so much stimulation over time that they're just basically burnt out. What we found was that tolerant hep C patients actually had many more exhausted T cells than non-tolerant hep C patients. And therefore, we wondered, or this led people to wonder, whether exhaustion is a mechanism of tolerance in liver transplantation. And there, what we did with our WHISPER patients, those 20 patients, is we compared the non-tolerance, again, at baseline before we withdrew immunosuppression, and they're shown in red on the left. And we looked at the tolerance, who are shown in blue and yellow on the right. And what we noticed is that the tolerant subjects have more exhausted T cells than the non-tolerant subjects. And what was even more interesting was that the tolerant group broke out into the blues and the yellows. The yellows actually look like the red patients, but the blue patients look different. This suggests that even though as a group they have more exhausted T cells, within that group of tolerant patients, perhaps there's two mechanisms of tolerance. The yellow people got to tolerance not by increased exhaustion, but some other mechanism, whereas the blue people got to tolerance through some sort of exhaustion pathway. So this is the very, very beginning of a glimmer as to why patients, some patients, might be tolerant. And so there's now a trial specifically designed to test this exhaustion hypothesis. This is led by Jim Markman at Mass General. UCSF is a center. Many of your patients may already have been approached for this trial. And what this trial is going to do is specifically ask whether markers of immune senescence and exhaustion are relevant in tolerance. The one thing I want to say is the tolerance community is small, and what is also a very exciting approach is that the LIFT trial, which is testing that biomarker, that tissue transcriptional profile, and the OPTIMAL trial, which is the exhaustion trial, are harmonized in that the inclusion-exclusion criteria is the same, the withdrawal algorithm is the same, the definition of tolerance is the same, and the specimens are collected at the same time. So the people will be mutually informative for two trials, one that's happening in the United States and one that's happening in Europe. So we're really excited about the potential of these trials to really open some doors. The final section is in regulatory T cell therapy. I think one other mechanism that's a favored mechanism is that the patients who are tolerant have better ways of regulating their anti-donor responses. They and in order to enhance that, what we want to do is to deliver autologous T cells that are regulatory in nature and that have been expanded in the laboratory. So just, I think Marion mentioned Tregs, but if you have no Tregs, you are a ball of autoimmunity. And here's a boy who's born without Tregs, and you can see he looks miserable. Tregs lead to autoimmune processes in the liver, the lung, and the skin. A group in Japan published earlier this year in Hepatology that they can make a donor-specific regulatory T-cell product, a bucket of recipient T-cells that are specific for their liver donor and that regulate immune responses. And using this regulatory T-cell product grown up in the lab and giving it with standard immunosuppression of steroids, mycophenolate, and CNIs, they started immunosuppression withdrawal within 6 months of transplant, finished immunosuppression withdrawal 18 months after transplant, and they were able to get 7 of 10 patients off of drug using this regulatory T-cell product. So this is very, very impressive. First, because it is super early post-transplant. Remember I told you we're not weaning immunosuppression until people are 5, 8, 10 plus years post-transplant. These people are getting weaned early, and you can certainly see the benefit of that. At UCSF, Kizi Tong and Jeff Bluestone have perfected a Treg manufacturing product where, again, we take a unit of blood from the liver transplant recipient. We can do it before transplant. We can do it after transplant. We use flow cytometry to purify the T cells. We then grow them up in the lab, and we expose them to donor antigen to pick out the Tregs that are specific for the donor. We don't want to expand Tregs against flu or Tregs against some bacteria. We want to expand the Tregs that are specific against the donor antigens. And you can see we can routinely expand them up to 1,000-fold. $70,000, and 2.5 weeks later, you come up with those Tregs, and you give them back to the recipient. Yes, $70,000 per prep. So maybe we can compare cost-benefit with Hep C treatment, huh? So to finish up, we currently have 2 trials. We thought this would actually, when we started talking to the NIH about this and to the FDA, we thought we would be first in man with Tregs, but of course, you know, things in the United States take a long time. We have a trial called Delta for de novo liver transplant, adults, deceased donor, safety dose escalation trial. We have another trial called Artemis. Artemis is alloreactive Tregs for immunosuppression minimization and withdrawal. These are adult living donor recipients who are 2 to 6 years post-transplant. We're not quite as bold as the Japanese group. And we have to do living donor because we need donor material, so we have to have them alive. And we're currently in the process of writing a protocol. We've gotten the funding for writing a protocol to do that de novo trial that I showed you that the Japanese people have done. And we hope we will open that in 2017. So immunosuppression can be safely attempted. Withdrawal can be safely attempted. This isn't for the faint of heart. You don't do this, you know, in your kitchen at home. You do this with a high degree of adult supervision. Acute rejection has been readily reversed, but it does happen. Spontaneous tolerance, just being able to withdraw immunosuppression without special treatment, is possible among highly selected liver transplant recipients. But we really have to monitor the allograft's histological health. We believe that part of the reason that the liver stays healthy is because the liver, we all know this, the liver is special. And we have to tell the kidney people and the heart people and the lung people that the liver is special. And the liver has some ability to deal with the attack that the systemic, the host immune response is mounting. And I showed you that with those alloantibodies. Lots of trials are underway, And there, you know, I didn't talk about other immunosuppression withdrawal trials that we've already done in adults at UCSF, but there are lots of trials underway to increase the safety and or the benefit of stopping immunosuppression, looking for biomarkers, gaining mechanistic insight, and using regulatory cell therapy so we can do it earlier post-transplant. And we are certainly hoping that our success may transform immunosuppression for liver transplant recipients in the future. I have to acknowledge large villages of people, starting with UCSF people that you all know, the Treg manufacturing group as well, patients and families, of course, collaborators, coordinators, funding, etc. And I want to leave you with this slide. These are the children that we've withdrawn from immunosuppression. You can see some of them when they started the trial. They were 6, 7, 8 years old. I've written college, admission letters, et cetera. They're going to prom. They're going to college. They're scaring me to death by drinking and having skyrocket high LFTs. And I tell them, excuse me, don't drink and repeat your LFTs, and they're beautifully back to normal. I'm not telling the parents because it's not my job. So these are really the heroes. Thank you so much.
It is absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.